Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, it's not warm enough this morning yet to take our first hose bath, but we'll probably do that after the show. It's kind of nice, Andrew, down here in Texas. You know, two or three times a day, you just go out on the porch and just hose off Doodle and Patrick. That's what we do. Hose right off here. How's the weather up there, Andrew Goss, up in New Jersey?
Well, we don't need a hose. How about that? You don't. It's just been raining and raining and raining and raining. And certainly the crops love it, but nothing else.
Yeah. Raining and raining.
You know, the mosquito population is
I can imagine.
Insane.
I can imagine, yeah. Andrew Goss is a currency historian. He's a part-time weather forecaster up in Hawthorne, New Jersey, where his company is halfway poised in Hawthorne and the other half in Hilton Head. It's called SDL. They buy and sell gold coins for a living. Andrew is part-time. He's a big-time movie producer. His new film, The Four Presidents, is going to be premiering on Netflix any day, just something like that. And he's writing another book, two books, Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. They're great ones. You get those on Amazon probably if you still can. And his new one, Monetary History of the United States, and we're here every Wednesday. So we've been talking a bit about healthcare, Mr. Goss, and the cost thereof. We had a lady on this show yesterday, Dr. Jane Orient, MD, and she laid out a remarkable kind of, I don't know, that remarkable story of how this whole thing works with the insurance companies and where the money goes. And you know what? It's about, they think about half of this $3 trillion is just kind of skimmed off the top.
No.
A little cream right off the old top. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine like a 1.5 is just being sucked up by the, I don't know, by the swamp?
Yeah.
I mean, does that surprise you?
No, not even in the slightest.
Does surprise you?
Not even.
Mm-mm. Wow. 1.5. And then I think it's about a $3 million deal. Mm-hmm. So what's really curious is, and at the risk of getting a little bit political, it's going to be a big deal for, and this is where the socialist Democrats are lining up. Do you know where they're lining up? They're lining up for health care for all.
Yes.
And this is going to be the big thing, I guess, in November, right?
SP, right? Single payer.
Single payer. And also, Andrew, they're calling it single payer, 100% Medicare for all, too. Those two terms. Yeah, Medicare for all, single payer. So this lady is like she is the new up-and-comer. You know who she is. Her name is Alexandria Cortez, right? And she and Bernie are out there selling this thing. And we've seen some figures on what this would cost. But here, she was on a late night talk show thing. And I mean, so, you know, I heard her and I ain't going to really go for this because it sounds good. Listen.
He paid a 15% tax rate. If corporations paid, if we reversed the tax bill, but went raised our corporate tax rate to 28%, which is not even as high as it was before.
Right.
If we do those two things and also close some of those loopholes, that's $2 trillion right there.
Is that true?
No.
You mean she was inaccurate?
Inaccurate, yeah.
Well, Andrew, you've taught us that the corporate taxes only account for, what, $200 billion?
Correct.
$200 billion. And she's saying just go back to 28%.
Mm-hmm. For corporations. In which they'll pack up their bags and leave again.
But even if they didn't, is it possible that could incur $2 trillion over 10 years?
Of course not.
No.
Especially not when you're going to cut the individual tax rate to 15%, and that's, of course, the place where the bulk of the revenue comes from.
So right now the math is not, let's continue.
Fuzzy. Here.
That's $2 trillion in 10 years. And it's wide, one of the wide estimates is that it's going to take $3 to $4 trillion to transition us to 100% renewable energy economy. So we got $2 trillion from folks paying their fair share, which they were not paying before.
So this is part of they're talking about getting the higher income folks to pay their fair share.
Yes.
Yeah. Are they paying their fair share now?
Hell yeah, they are.
How come? Why? How can they be that wrong?
Because, well, I mean, you know, if you can live on $100,000 a year comfortably, mm-hmm. then it seems like everything you make over $100,000 is redundant and should be given to the government so that she can decide how to spend it. These progressive income taxes are the death of capitalism. It's actually one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto.
Progressive. Progressive means the more you make, the more you pay.
The more you make, the more you pay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you were king, would you do just a straight percentage for everybody?
I would do a consumption tax.
Consumption, huh?
Yeah. Eliminate the income tax.
Yeah, that'd be good. Okay, let's continue with this. This gets better.
For the Trump tax bill.
Right.
They weren't paying that before the Trump tax bill. If we get people to pay their fair share, that's $2 trillion in 10 years. Now, if we implement a carbon tax on top of that, we can transition and financially incentivize people away from fossil fuels, we implement a carbon tax, that's an additional amount of...
let me guess.
Of a large amount.
A large amount.
And then the last key, extremely important, is reprioritization. Uh-huh. Just last year, we gave the military a $700 billion budget increase, which they...
Increase?
That's not true.
No.
Which they didn't even ask for.
They didn't ask.
They're we don't want another fighter jet.
No.
Don't give us another nuclear bomb.
Right. Yeah.
They didn't even ask for it. And we gave it to them.
Sure.
And so, don't you love
she
this?
She is funny. She's
don't
funny.
You love this girl? She's the standard bearer for for the socialist Democrats.
I love it. Yeah, no, I think they've picked a great spokesman.
Wow. So don't you find it curious that they're calling themselves socialist Democrats?
Sure.
I mean, I think it's kind of...
You don't meet too many socialist Republicans.
Well, this is curious. So then we get to the burn. And then he's talking about healthcare now.
Which they didn't even ask for.
I know.
They're like, we don't want...
We've already heard
We don't
that
want
one.
Another bomb.
Where's Bernie? Did I mess it up? Hold on a second.
I hope so. We don't have to listen to Bernie.
Bernie.
You've got more than a dozen Democrats now supporting your Medicare for All plan in the Senate. You're campaigning hard all across the country. Two quick questions. How do you respond to those who say you're pulling the party too far to the left? And is it fair to say, given your activities, you're not ruling out another run for president in 2020?
Medicare for All.
Well, let me just say the idea of a Medicare for All.
Medicare for
the
All.
The idea that the United States of America should join every other major country on earth in guaranteeing health care to every man, woman, and child, this is not a radical idea. In fact, poll after poll shows that a majority of the American people support that idea. People want to know, why as a nation, George, we are spending twice as much per capita on health care as do the people of Canada or many of the European countries, while our health care outcomes are not necessarily as good. And people also want to know why we pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. So I don't see this as a radical idea. I see it as an idea that more and more people want. Medicare today is a very popular program. It's the most popular health insurance program in the country. Let's expand it to everybody over a four-year period.
Yeah, hooray for Bernie. Yeah, how do countries do that have this free health care for all? I mean... Do we know how can we gauge what they've been doing?
Well, sure you can. You know, you can provide a basic level of bare bones. Here's a table, here's a fork, eat. But if you think you're going to get fine china and maybe some linen, you're not. Not on the socialized medical program. So, generally, by cheapening the quality of the services, that's how they provide it for everyone.
So, the argument that this one, the United States, is the most expensive and some of the lower outcomes, as Bernie said, and he's probably true, that doesn't take into account the fact that it's a pretty failed system, and they just treat the symptoms, right?
Right.
So, right, they're just treating the symptoms. So sure. It's got to keep getting bigger because they just give more drugs. So I think that could be argued that that's the real problem, isn't it? Is it the government's mandate? I mean, is it the government's job to provide this anyway? Or
well, I mean, what do you do with this? Lots of things they do are not their mandate. They take the general welfare clause, which says that the government will provide for the general welfare of the people, and they run that as the flag under which everything that they're not supposed to do flies. So they ignore the Ninth and Tenth Amendment and just, you know, wade forth. That's it.
Yeah. So I don't know where this is going to go. I mean, I just... So we'll see.
Well, curious, I've often said that if we want to fix the healthcare system, remove the words over 65, right, from the Medicare language.
Yeah, you've talked about that, where you would just have a system like it is now and just have everybody in if you want, right?
Not just the elderly, correct.
Now, but then you'd have to put more in.
Oh, yeah. Well, instead of mandating people get private health insurance, you mandate that they pay an additional Medicare tax. That's
was it something you said?
Was it something I said?
Did you hear that noise? No.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what that was.
I don't know. Well, okay. So where were we? Where were you about? What were you saying?
The idea of removing the words over 65.
Over 65 to the Medicare thing.
Yeah. It seems like a pretty simple way to fix it.
And then what you would do... try to calculate how much is going in and how much is going out, and then you'd have to raise then the
Medicare tax.
The Medicare tax now, right now. What's that, about 2 or 3% or something like
something
that?
Something ridiculously low.
And
of course I wouldn't cap it. You know, the cap now on I think it's 110,000. Everything over that you don't pay additional. So I would not cap it at all. And that would be the answer to the no health insurance problem. Now, I believe in that same environment that the rich, and even the ultra-rich, man, let's just say those that can't afford it and want to, can seek out private care for a fee. And maybe there's a better mousetrap. Maybe there's a different one. And if you want to pay for that yourself, you can.
You just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, but the idea that you have a basic level of health care... well, that's, again, how the other countries do it. Sure, they don't pay for everything, and maybe they're not the most efficient, but at least you're going to get some care, some degree of care. You're not going to be left to die. And I think Americans will be satisfied with that, by and large.
There's more and more people, and we talked about on the show, and we've had some people on the show, where they're doing the cash and also direct pay, and they have actually hospitals where you can do that, and go in and get a hernia thing for, you know, $200 or whatever.
Then there's the medical tourism.
Oh, medical?
Tourism.
What is that?
Well, where you fly to a foreign country and get your medical care there a hell of a lot cheaper than you do in the United States, and it's cheaper than a vacation, right? So it's like the procedure that you're going to do here that's going to cost you $20,000, you can have done in South America for $2,000 and save the other 18.
Yeah.
Or have a vacation at the same time. So they call it medical tourism, where folks actually plan their trip around a particular surgical procedure.
Yeah, there's folks that, of course, are going to Mexico for stem cell stuff, and you can also find some pretty good, really good dentists down there for about half the price, sometimes even less.
Right.
And they're going down to Mexico to do that one.
Well,
take care of yourselves, folks, so you don't.
Yeah, that's it.
So you don't have to get involved in this.
Don't wait for the government to take care of you. That's for sure.
Man. If you'd like to be on the show, 888-663-6386. Email Patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Well, Forbes magazine says that the president has really three choices here. You want to hear them? Okay, so I know you're going to like these. Let me see if I can find them.
Yeah. All of them play right into my hand.
Well, they do. This is your your specialty. Where is it? Come on, Patrick. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?
Your tab's out of order.
I got it. Okay, so here's the deal. So, so I had it here and then I lost it. First one was to involving the dollar as the world reserve currency would be to under the current dollar standard muddle along under the current dollar standard. They say that's his first choice among the Brian Riley and William Wilson, the Heritage Foundation, and somebody at the American Enterprise Institute. Second, turn the International Monetary Fund into a world central bank, issuing paper special drawing rights reserves as proposed in 1943 by good old
John Maynard.
John Maynard. John Maynard said that one. So John Maynard was talking about that since that long ago.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, well, he recognized the power that would build up in the United States if our currency was the reserve currency. And he didn't want that. So, of course, to him, the central bank being a world institution, instead of the institution of any particular country.
I see. So he was a global eye.
Yeah.
He was a global eye.
Yeah. I think so.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And then third is adopt a modernized international gold standard as proposed in the 60s by Rueff, R-U-E-F-F, and in 1884 by his protege, Louis Lerman, and then was that Howard Ruff?
Yeah.
Oh no.
Sure.
Is that Howard Ruff? Is that how you say his name?
Sure, yeah, Ruff.
Well, he was just a blogger. He just wrote a newsletter. Anyway, and then Representative Jack Kemp.
Right.
All right. So they go on, and this is pretty curious. He said, Trump has been misled to believe that we don't have the gold. Other places have the gold. In fact, says Forbes, the United States, Germany, and IMF together have about as much gold as the rest of the world combined, and America as well, than Germany and the IMF combined.
Mm-hmm.
This columnist says, we have the gold. Bringing back the gold standard would not be very hard to do.
Right. Let's go.
Now, we did the math. Of course, if you did a pure gold standard, and Andrew Gosson, ladies and gentlemen, it was $50,000.
Yeah, 54.
But other than that, I'm curious, Andrew. Mm. So say if you really just wanted to do that.
You could say
we have 8,000 whatever ounces and we have $30 trillion out there and we're just going to back it all by gold and it's $50,000, right?
Right.
You could do it. Okay. Who comes up with the 50,000 when you go to, now see, I've been thinking about this. Who comes up with the 50 grand when you go to the Fed and say, I want $50,000 for this ounce of gold?
Yeah, well, the nation's gold reserves. Who comes up with the 50 grand in this case?
You mean they would sell?
They would print the money to represent the gold that you're handing over.
Oh, good.
And then put that in the vault with the rest of the nation's gold. You know, this was Roosevelt's original plan with Fort Knox. He wanted to take all the gold that he had confiscated and put it in a glass Fort Knox that you could drive around and see.
Oh, that's good.
Right? But that you couldn't have. So, like, it's there, trust us.
Yeah.
You know, it's here, and this is the ratio. It's 50 to 1 or 35 to 1, as it was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So now it would have to be 50,000 to 1. And even that wouldn't keep the banks honest. It just, they can't help themselves.
Yes. So let's see. So you bring the ounce in. They create $50,000, give it to you.
Yep.
They take your gold and put it on the stack.
Mm-hmm. Then you circulate the 50. And if somebody comes back and says, here's the 50 that I've gathered, give me the ounce of gold, then it's handed over. The 50 is handed to the Fed. And in theory, they destroy the 50,000.
Wow. That's a pretty cool little thing, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, what does that do to the value, or the notional value called P money, and the notional value like of derivatives and all this stuff? How does that even play in? I mean, you can't cover all that with
gold.
Well,
that's the problem. It turns the entire system upside down.
It just wouldn't, yeah.
And all of the things that they do now, they couldn't do. All of this financial engineering that goes on today could not go on with a gold standard. This was why I remember what my grandpa said. Remember, he said, these guys, meaning Congress, had to spend real money, meaning gold and silver coin. They couldn't do what they do. We've spent generations of wealth. We've borrowed generations of wealth. And it's all based on the federal government's taxable income. It's taxability.
Taxability, right.
Yeah, so their ability to tax your income is what backs the debt that has been piled on in the name of both parties since 1967. So prior to that, we generally ran with a flat budget. You know, we spent what we took in. We didn't borrow excessively.
Really?
Now,
really?
Yeah.
We didn't have. Yeah, I guess we didn't have a lot of debt.
Debt.
1960 or so when Kennedy was in. Do you know?
Yeah, yeah. We did not have a lot of debt, but it was substantially lower than it is right now. But as a percentage of GDP, it's probably the lowest, a lot lower than it is now.
Let me Google that. United States have in 1960. Let's do that one, huh? Just
sure.
For fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How much debt do the United States have in 1960?
100 million?
What was the net U.S. debt in 1960? According to this, it is debt in billions. Oh, 286 billion.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's nothing.
A quarter.
Isn't that
trillion.
Amazing, Andrew Goss?
Yeah.
$286 billion when I was in high school. That's all they owed.
Yes, but think of what a dollar was then, you know, for. 4 gallons to a dollar of gas.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
A three-bedroom house, maybe $14,000. A new car, maybe $3,000.
Mm-hmm. So how did we get from $285 billion 50 years ago to $20 trillion just
21.
In, 21 just in bonded debt?
Wow.
Where's all that money? I mean, it doesn't, where'd all that money go?
Yeah, where did it go?
You know what I'm saying?
What did we spend
it on?
I mean,
we got a few more buildings. We got, you know, we got improvements, but we don't have $21 trillion of stuff.
It certainly doesn't reflect in GDP.
I mean, we don't have 21. Well, where'd the $21 trillion go?
It was stolen, plain and simple. You know, the monetization of debt allows for enormous theft and... People, how did Abraham Lincoln define slavery? You work and I'll eat. So the non-productive class, if you will, has gotten a lot bigger since 1960.
So the $21 trillion was just kind of sopped up by the uppity-ups, who the rich dudes or the corporations and all
the
that
rich
kind of
got
stuff?
Richer.
Banks and stuff like that.
What do they call them now? The 2% or the 1%?
Whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So that's what the $21 trillion is.
Yeah, the rich got richer.
Mm-hmm. I see. So that's why, one of the reasons, I guess, Apple, now they're about to be the first trillion-dollar company.
Amazing.
So that's one of the $20
trillion. Sure. There's one. You need 20 more.
You need 20 more. You can figure it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's pretty amazing when you start making make dollars in the basement, isn't it?
Yes. Make money the old-fashioned way.
We make it.
Make it.
We make it. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. If you'd like to be on the show this morning, you can do that, and you can do it very easily just by dialing in if you'd like, or if you would like to email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Andrew Goss and the Real World of Money. It is the 1st of August, 2018. I don't believe I've heard such a concise, clear explanation of what EMFs could possibly do to the body than recently with Dr. Lee Cowden.
Now, electromagnetic fields are multiply problematic because the electromagnetic fields will disrupt the membrane barriers. So it disrupts the gut barrier and allows more toxins to get from the gut into the bloodstream. It disrupts the blood vessel barrier, so you get more toxins from the bloodstream out into the tissues. It disrupts the blood-brain barrier, which allows more toxins from the bloodstream to get into the brain. And the electromagnetic fields are screwing up the electrical charge across the cell membrane. The health of a cell is determined primarily by the electrical charge across the cell membrane. But when you expose a cell to electromagnetic field, that charge across the cell membrane diminishes over time. And so the cell becomes sicker and sicker and sicker. Now, in addition, research from Europe shows that whenever you expose microbes to electromagnetic fields, they grow faster and produce more biotoxins. So we know that funguses, for example, will produce as much as 600 times more biotoxin or mycotoxin if they are outside of a Faraday cage compared to being inside of a Faraday cage in the same environment.
So as you know, the only way to absolutely be protected from all EMFs is live in a Faraday cage, but that's probably not very practical. We have the Blue Shield technology through Brandon Amalani. We think this is a very, very effective way to build your body's immunity with the cells. Look at the technology. Talk to Brandon. Email him. Look at it closely. Research it and see what you think. Blue Shield, right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Yeah, this is really, really pretty cool stuff. I've been reading a little bit more about it, and you plug this in, and what it does is it makes a passive and active Schumann devices resonance. The amazing test technology behind the Blue Shield. It was founded 25 years ago, $200 million in R&D investments out of Australia. Mark Landon, who Brandon's talk about, he's the founder of the Blue Shield technology. And it works on the cells in the body. And Blue Shield entrains your body to resonate with thousands of scalar wave frequencies arranged in a Fibonacci pattern. We talk about Fibonacci common in nature. This in turn helps you to cope more peacefully with harmful frequencies produced by EMF from Wi-Fi, smart meters, mobile phones, towers, and more. And it does it, and it changes it often so your body doesn't get used to it. It's pretty cool. They have also a personal guy that you can put in your pocket about as big as a credit card. And it's called Blue Shield. It's on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Check it out.
Starving for vitality, we're turning to energy drinks, stimulants, and pharmaceuticals to try to improve our focus, increase our metabolism, rescue our sex drive, and adapt to the stresses of modern-day living. Each year, an elk sheds its impressive antlers, regenerating an even larger set the following year. These velvet antlers have been a revered traditional medicine for thousands of years. Elk antler harnesses the adaptogenic and highly regenerative growth factors from this natural and ethical resource into a concentrated, bioavailable extraction. Its revitalizing effects span bone, muscle, and nerve support. Improve metabolism, cellular repair, sexual potency, anti-inflammation, vascular strengthening, and hormone production. Humanely harvested from free-range U.S. elk, extracted in organic alcohol, and protected in Miron glass, our elk antler is available in three strengths to restore your vitality at any level.
This is from Sir Thrival Elk Antler. You can get also the pine pollen. We talk a lot about colostrum, Shaga and Rishi, the K2 Daylight, which is a nice K2, and also vitamin D. Then they have a new product here, which is Digestive Bitters, and it's a thing for a happier gut, and it's kind of a classic European formula that they modeled up a little bit. Dandelion root and all kinds of things, fennel, yellow dock, ginger. It's a great thing for digestion, and so, as you know, once we digest the food, then everybody's really, really happy. And if you know, digestion, elimination, get that down, and that's about 90% of the game on planet Earth, in my opinion. So check it out, Digestive Bitters, Daniel Vitalis, on One Radio Network. We're with Andrew Goss, and it's The Real World Money. It is August 1st, 2018. You know, Andrew, I was playing around with my little meters because we've been doing some more shows on these EMFs, mm-hmm. and they're talking about you know, how challenging they could be on the body. You know, these, I got these big, cut several big battery things, you know, the battery backups and surge GPS's, protector things.
Yeah.
Man, those suckers put out some
EMF.
Wow, yeah. Man, I didn't realize it.
Sure.
Man, I had it right on my feet too, so I've been redesigning things here, you know.
Yeah, centralize them.
Centralize them, meaning put them in the closet.
Basement.
Put them in the basement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to figure out how to do that. Yeah, put it, get them all back away from you, huh? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to do.
Yeah, I guess it works the same principle then, why I get such high readings in the Prius, the battery technology. So I guess this is going to be, it could be a big issue for the Tesla boys, too. Not that they don't have their own problems now with Elon.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. Batteries. Batteries just throw it off, don't they?
That's right.
Throw it off.
They don't have a choice. It's what they do.
Oh, you mean what are they going to do with it?
Yeah. EMF's like a byproduct, you know?
Yeah. Do you know this company, Carillion, Carillion, the world's, it was one of the world's largest through, largest, hold on. What they did was provided services to governments. It didn't manufacture anything, didn't have a lot of assets, didn't have a lot of debt, but that debt on its balance sheet amounted to $219 million, but Fitch estimated that it was about $500 million, and this debt was concomitantly referred to reverse factoring. So I wanted to ask you about this. According to Fitch, there's a lot of companies that are doing this that it doesn't show up the debt, and a lot of these companies are in worse situation than they really are. What's reverse factoring?
Yeah, well, it's where you're, when you factor something, you're paying, so a factor would come in and loan you money based on your accounts receivable, right?
Yeah.
So somebody owes you money, and they give it to you.
Oh, so I have somebody that owes me $20,000 because I sold him some stuff, and he hasn't paid me.
Yeah. Right?
Right. And I can borrow this?
Yeah. You can borrow, well, that's factoring.
So here it is. So company A, the buyer, purchases the goods from normal business.
Correct.
Company B then...
owes the money.
Owes the money.
And then a bank stands in the middle,
yeah,
and commits to pay for the invoices to the supplier in exchange for a discount.
But this...
So you're going to give me $1,000 worth of widgets...
And I get my money quicker.
And you get your $1,000 from the bank that's in between us. And they charge me $1,010 now, or $1,100 for the widgets.
But according to this huge company, they weren't putting that on their balance sheet.
Of course not.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
So they had huge amounts of debts that nobody,
that weren't visible. Right.
So when they went belly up, everybody was going, how did that happen?
Yeah, wait a minute.
How did that happen?
Yeah, how did that happen?
So the creditors, shareholders, they're at risk without even knowing it.
Correct.
Wow.
Which is where they are in the first place. So you develop a supply chain, and within that supply chain, you can finance your accounts receivable receipts. So you can hand those to your bank and say, okay, you know, these guys here that bought my goods owe me, and I need you to give me whatever it is that's on the invoice. And then I get instant money, and the bank gets a little cash flow.
But once you get into playing with money, get off of a gold standard and playing with money, all bets are off, aren't they?
About financial engineering, yeah. Yes.
That's what it's called, huh? Financial engineering.
Sure, and this is one of those wonderful engineered products. Rather than waiting to get paid and building your business around waiting to get paid, you can factor your receivables and actually get the money first.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that Bitcoin would be a financial engineered product?
Well, of course. Of course it is. There's no substance behind it, right? There's no gold or silver or even an accounts receivable invoice.
Or even an F-16.
There's nothing behind
nothing.
It.
Nada.
But it is a unique series of digits which can be limited by the number of combinations thereof. So I think that number is 21 million, right? There's 21 million combinations of the 26 letters and 10 numbers.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. 21 million? Yeah, 21 million.
The G20 seems to be... they were going to get together and come up with their way they were going to regulate Bitcoin, right, in July. But now they pushed it on to October because right. I don't know why. You know, do you know why?
Well, those Winklevide twins were...
Were they over there?
Well, they were trying to get something run through the SEC. They were going to be offering a mutual fund or some kind of a closed-end fund that invested in these cryptocurrencies. And they told the world that they were getting this approval, and then not so fast. We're not going to give the approval. So what we're going to see is CBDC. Central Bank Digital Currency. So they're going to hijack the technology behind these cryptocurrencies and use it on the dollar and the euro and the yen and the yuan. So that's where we're heading.
You think any of the cryptos will survive long term?
No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't.
Oh. What would happen to all that, the cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, or the, whatever their cap is? It would just explode,
evaporate. You know, the thing, the anonymous portion of Bitcoin is what gave it its growth, right? The ability to interact with this system anonymously.
That was the original, wasn't it? The original pull. Right?
That was it. Yeah. That was it, yeah. And then it became a greater fool's investment where, oh, somebody's going to pay more than I paid. And so I'm buying it and just holding it and storing it. That's going to evaporate soon. So as the central banks of the world issue their own digital currency that's also limited, it will have the same effect. Remember what the gold standard was all about.
And there's a limited amount of
gold. Right. And so that necessarily limited the amount of money that could be issued, especially when it was backed by gold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's going to be backed by a finite number of crypto digits, well, then at least there's a limit. You know how much.
You think the central banks will go ahead and mimic the platform of Bitcoin, where they say there's going to be a limited amount of whatever dollar digits, whatever the government, whatever they do.
Yeah, I'm anxious
to
see
creating a commodity, right?
Right. Now there was a white paper.
That'd be
that
pretty
came,
smart, really.
Sure.
That'd be pretty smart.
A white paper came out of the Canadian Central Bank.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
About this very subject of
oh,
using,
did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
So they come out with a limited amount. I mean, that thing would probably go be huge.
Yeah,
I mean,
it would go
like hugely.
Yes.
I mean,
well, it would assuage some of the fears that, you know, there's no limit to the amount of dollars.
We're talking about the.
Digital currency.
Digital currency and having a limited supply that was offered by government.
Correct. Yeah. Central bank.
A central bank. Oh. You mean, so the Treasury wouldn't even do this? They would give this to the New York Fed, too?
Of course.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm.
It's monetary
don't,
policy.
Don't we get anything?
No, we don't. No. Not as long as the Federal Reserve is an independent agency. All the benefits that accrue will accrue to them.
So they would actually allow the New York... Who's going to stop them, right? The New York Fed, the private Fed, to do their own, whatever, FedCoin or something like that.
Right.
I don't know if they could call it FedCoin.
Yeah. They call
don't
it
we
dollars.
Have the, don't we have the trademark on Fed, the Treasury? Probably not. No, obviously we don't.
You know,
Federal Reserve Bank of New York, right?
As it is, digital currencies, cryptocurrencies, are not legal tender. So if they were... representations of Canadian dollars or U.S. dollars, and they would be legal tender.
And they, well, they still haven't really, Andrew, have they actually classified them either as a commodity, a security, what was the other one? Commodity, security.
Money.
Or legal tender, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're not, haven't really been classified.
No.
As yet.
You can't decide what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And until we do, until there's some regulatory framework, it's not a very secure place to store your wealth. But then what is? What on earth is?
Well, I think gold coins might be a
good, yeah,
might
thank
be a
you.
Good choice. That's what you do, right?
That's why I do what I do, yeah.
But you like the idea, though, if you're new here. Andrew likes the idea. He's been buying and selling gold coins for how long? 35
40,
years? 40 years?
40 years, yeah.
You like the idea that there's no middle dudes or dudettes, right?
Well,
I mean, you just got them in your sock drawer, you're safe, and then, you know, as long as you don't lose them, you're good.
Yeah, it's a two-edged sword, though, isn't it? So there's no central authority. It's like there's no one to complain to. There's no one in the middle.
You don't get to call up anybody. Yeah. Say the price of gold went down. Yeah. Well, but with collectible coins, of course, it doesn't matter if the gold price goes down. So
that's right. Yeah, but with no regulatory authority means that it's the Wild West, and so there are no rules. And if there are rules, they're subject to change. And you know, these types of things are not good for investors. So at least with the rare coins, we know how many there are and how many were made, and we know what their grades are based on what the NGC says. So you have some degree of security. It's granted, it's not perfect, but it is better than the alternative.
Which is losing your money.
Yeah, or not having any. And being told, well, that's not your money. It's yours, but you can't have it. Or any one of those combinations.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to get the full value out of your holdings. That's what money is all about.
Mm-hmm. This price of gold thing is, you know, there's a lot of bearishness on gold. I was reading this morning where the shorts, some of the
records.
Record amount. So what's that about, Andrew?
Well, it's the pendulum swings in both directions. So if you recall when gold was 1900 and they were talking about it's going to 2500, and to me I said if it did, I would sell. I'd be a seller all of a sudden. Why? Well, because when it seems that everybody and their Aunt Susie wants to buy gold, that's the time you should be selling it. And when everybody and their Aunt Susie wants to sell gold, that's the time you should be buying it. As the Rothschilds put it, when blood is running in the streets, that's when you want to be the buyer. So that's why I counsel folks to accumulate and then take opportunities like this, dips in the price of gold or silver, to accumulate, to add to your holdings. Because the pendulum swings and, you know, it'll go the other way just as quickly. So for right now, you're right. If you look at the search term buy gold on Google, it's as low as it's ever been.
I'll be doing. Yeah, CFTC data report as of yesterday showed speculators piling in increasingly into the most crowded trades as if nothing will ever change.
Right.
The two most extreme position situations are gold and U.S. Treasuries. There's never been more hedge funds shorts in precious metals in the history, and it's accelerating.
That's correct.
So tell folks what that means.
Well, it just means that folks are willing to sell the promise that they will deliver gold in the future at some predetermined price.
Lower than what it is today.
Well, they think it's going to be lower than what it is.
I mean, yeah.
That's why they agreed to sell it based at this price.
Man, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
But don't these hedge fund dudes, don't they understand a little bit of what we talk about here? I mean, are they that out in the wilderness?
Well, they...
Not that we're in the wilderness. Yeah, we think we are. We hope we are, right?
They follow the herd. They do have a tendency to follow the herd.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that is the popular trade. Shorting gold today, shorting silver.
Mm-hmm. Huge. And,
yeah.
Huge.
Gigantic moneymaker.
Gigantic.
Until it isn't. And unfortunately, you know, that Daniel Drew, he who sells what isn't his'n, must pay the price or go to prison. So when you know, if gold goes up $200, now these folks are kind of locked into delivering it at the lower price. So this is when the phenomenon known as short covering comes into play. So when you have all these outsized bets, there's so many people are short.
Yeah.
And then the price does the opposite of what they anticipate. Then they all rush in to buy in order to cover their shorts before it goes in.
What do they buy? What do they buy at that
physical
point?
Physical. Well, they have to buy gold or buy another contract to offset the one they're engaged in.
Well, when they go out and buy physical, Andrew, wouldn't that just drive up the price of gold?
Exactly.
Oh.
But as long as they cover their shorts, they don't care about their competitors.
Cover your shorts, kid.
Cover your shorts, yeah.
Wow.
That's it.
That's tricky business, man.
And it is.
You're talking about billions, kabillions, right?
Right, right. But, you know, it's cash flow for them, because when you sell what you don't have, you get to keep the money, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That's in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. And the curious thing about gold and why it's a kind of a risky thing, in my opinion, is that gold is so much tied to uncertainty and whatever, you know. You have some big event happen and gold just goes up a lot.
Yeah, just 'cause and people rush scared, into right? gold, they get scared. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that, of course, is the danger to those that are shorting gold right now. So maybe you don't buy it, but you don't short it. That seems insane in my mind. Mm-hmm. But again, there are those out there who believe the dollar is going to continue to get stronger, which doesn't make sense from a national point of view. You think about it, our currency being so strong makes our goods so expensive around the world that they don't need to put tariffs on us. We put it on ourselves. So if you look at the Chinese, for example, how are they dealing with the threat of Donald Trump's tariffs? They're reducing the value of their currency. So they're making their currency cheaper so that, well, then, you know, it becomes more attractive to buy their exports because their money is worth less. We cannot stand and allow our currency to be the strongest in the world, certainly not at a time when the Fed is raising interest rates, because there's going to be an entire flight to quality as folks around the world say, wait a minute, the U.S. Treasury bond is paying a percentage higher than everyone else on the planet, so let's sell our yen, yuan, mark, whatever, and buy.
To buy these. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the connection I was about to ask. So that's great. I appreciate that. Now I understand. So the Fed raises interest rates a little bit, makes buying treasuries more attractive, right? Because the interest rates are going up.
Yeah.
And you're going to get more of a dividend.
Correct.
So then the folks around the world, the yuanis and guys and girls, they'll sell their...
Home currency
to buy dollars. Or they'll trade their currencies to buy dollars.
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
And then that drives up the price...
Of the dollar.
Okay.
And drives down the value of their home currencies.
Yeah.
Which, making them more competitive in the world marketplace.
So they don't care. They don't care.
They really don't. Oh. Mm-hmm. So the only way that we can compete with that is with the Federal Reserve's cooperation. Now, I'll make an interesting note here that the last Treasury auction was uncovered, meaning there weren't enough bids to cover all of the debt that the Treasury needed to sell.
From the private guys like you and me.
Yeah, from banks and private guys, private investors.
So the Fed had to come in and buy.
The Fed had to come in and monetize, correct.
That would be like quantitative easing, would it not?
It is, but it's not done as monetary policy. It's done because there are no other buyers, and the Fed is the lender of last resort. So considering that our financing or refinancing needs have exploded and will continue to explode, as I pointed out, once again, in Donald Trump's first term, 60% of the nation's debt is coming due, or around $12 trillion.
Yeah.
And as they go to refinance this or refund it, the only people that are going to buy it are those that believe that the value is worthy, it's worth it.
Oh, you mean the ones that don't care if interest rates are going up?
Correct.
And that would be the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
And they would monetize it, and that's a nice way of saying they type it
added
up,
more money.
They
yeah.
type it up on a Dell. It is a Dell 15800XQSD computer, so it's a really good computer. So the digits should be
makes
very,
the money good.
Oh,
yeah.
Very good, very good digits. Wow. So that's what they do. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the point in the cycle where we are. So if the Fed doesn't raise interest rates and doesn't make buying U.S. Treasury debt more attractive,
right?
Then the Treasury is unable to sell its debt. And then the Fed has to step in and buy it, which kind of reverses their whole QE strategy.
So, because they're supposed to be selling.
Correct. So you can count on the third rate increase this year, now, and then the fourth one in the fourth quarter.
And that's, when you say a rate increase, that's just the federal funds rate for the banks, right?
That's right.
And that's right. That's what the banks, it costs the banks to borrow from the Fed?
Yeah, essentially.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
And what's it at now?
I have no idea.
I don't either.
Low.
Yeah, like 2%, something like that.
Like no percent.
Oh, is it still that low? I thought they'd been raising it a quarter point.
They have, but it was, you know, from nothing.
From nothing, no. No. Mm-hmm. Well, so how do you think that the Trump administration is balancing this whole economic little thing that they got their arms around? Long-term... there was a society general suggests that tariffs short-term are inflationary.
Very
inflationary. And mid-term, they are disinflationary. So explain what does society or general saying with what Mr. Trump is doing.
Well, obviously, inflationary in that we're the only ones that pay. So when the Chinese want to bring stuff into the United States,
steel,
and it's a 25% tariff, they simply raise the price to cover the cost of the tariff. So in the short run, the price of that commodity or good rises and reflected in the consumer price index or the producer price index, it will show a higher print, a higher read of inflation.
Okay, so like cars and
anything
stuff
made
like
of steel.
Steel and right. Aluminum, right?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. So that's where it's inflationary at the beginning.
Now, unless the central banks act to supplement the supply of money, it takes more and more of the nation's money to buy and pay these tariffs. So obviously, we enter a recession again, and it's disinflationary. Prices fall.
Why would we enter a recession, Andrew, if a lot of these dollars, extra dollars, have to be used to buy this stuff that costs more because of the tariffs?
Well, then there'll be less dollars to buy everything else.
Okay, and that's disinflation.
Correct. Unless the Fed acts to counteract these forces by putting more money into circulation. Hence my belief that they are not done with quantitative easing. That, you know, they're going to be forced, the Fed is, for two reasons. And one has to do with that. The other has to do with competitiveness. When it becomes impossible for American goods to maintain price competitiveness, then the supply of money has to increase. You can't have the dollar be too strong in this environment.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Boy, kind of fun. So you think then we're going to see a classic R-word recession in President Trump's turn in our economy?
Well, I think the Fed is not too worried about it. How about that?
Hmm.
So you will see that I predicted 4 interest rate increases this year. And I think you may see 5 next year. So they're not they're going to pick up the pace of interest rate increases and next to keep up with what was that 4.1% GDP growth?
Yeah, 4.1, I think.
And we plowed past the inflation targets. So really no justification for the Fed to leave rates unchanged.
Mm-hmm. 888-663-6386 email patrick@oneradionetwork.com with Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone, and join the show. 888-663-6386 email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Rebounders are on sale.
Previously with cancer specialist Dr. Francisco Contreras on rebounding.
There's a study that was done in America with women that exercise 4 hours a week strenuously. And those that had 66 less incidence of cancer of the breast than the women that didn't do exercise. That's how impactful exercise can be.
We've been a big fan of rebounding, these little trampolines, for years.
Rebounding is one of the best because not only is it not as aerobic as many other exercises, but it is, but it also moves the lymph from within your body. And remember that lymph is the one that's bringing out all of the toxins. And if you don't get it up to your heart and then out through the urine, the toxins stay there. So rebounding is an excellent, excellent form of exercise that just about anybody can do. I mean, we have some 85-year-old people that rebound. It's very easy, even for elderly people, to get on the rebounder and just go up and down.
And you can have some fun. You can have some weights. You know, get yourself a little 2-pounder, 3-pounders. I've got 2 through 5, and you can dink around with those depending on what you can do, and you could get stronger and healthier with not a whole lot of effort because you're bouncing around and you're using the G-force. If you'd like to get the half fold, which is the one we sell all the time, generally for $339, you can email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, and we'll sell it to you for $299. Or if you'd like to get the ultimate, which is also the quarter fold, and if you'd like to take a look at that, simply go to reboundair.com and look at the ultimate quarterfold, and they sell it for $429. Come back to our website and just order the rebounder per usual right on the website. on the front page, the one that it says sale, with the gal jumping on a red rebounder, and pay $339 and we'll ship you the ultimate, the quarterfold, for $339. It's a great deal. And both of these, by the way, have a lifetime warranty. Talking about the EMFs, I wanted another good way, along with the Bluetooth, you could look at the little pyramid. It's a scalar energy pyramid, and it put out scalar energy waves and kind of keeps Doodle and I protected here in our little waves of love, or whatever you want to call it, scalar energy, old Tesla stuff. And that's a pretty cool thing that you can put in your bedroom. I think you'll like the way it feels in there. You can stick one in there, goes out about 15 feet, put it there on your dresser, anywhere you want, right on your nightstand. It's a good spot. And it's just a little nice, little beautiful little gold pyramid. And then also, when you go on the website, you can look at the Vitalizer Plus. The Vitalizer Plus. And that's a very nice way to structure your water. Comes with a cube in it. It's at the bottom. And it's organic minerals that goes right into the water. So after you detox or you distill your water, or even if you get some bottled water, a lot of people do that, like the Crystal Geyser. It's a good brand, and gallon jugs, if they don't have a water filter. You can put that Crystal Geyser water right in the Vitalizer Plus and structure it, put a few more minerals in there, and it's a very nice water to drink. And it has a timer on it, and it actually will tell you through a little code, it'll tell you very clearly when it runs out, and you just get another cube. They last, just depends on how much water you drink, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. Not sure exactly how long mine lasted, but we just replaced ours. So it's a very cool technology, and structuring the water, it's real. So I know it's a little wee-woo, but trust me, it's real. It's the real deal. So that's a couple of things that you can do. Also, Ken's got some other great products. The Scalar Salt is one of our faves. That's in our store. Look at some of the other things he has on his website, Fresh and Alive. If Ken Roller's doing it, then you know that it's just some good stuff, because he's a very clever guy.
Know the Source on One Radio Network.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
Well, Andrew Goss, it's the real world of money. Andrew's a currency historian. He's an author working on his third book. He buys and sells gold coins for a living. His company is SDL. You guys got anything to sell up there? I mean, what's your inventory like?
Oh, yeah, we're loaded.
You loaded up?
Loaded for bear.
Really? Like for bear?
Yeah, if I'm wrong, I'm dead.
That's right. And you're about to go to a big auction right in Philly, right? Yeah, the last time I did it, it was your fault. I'm going to blame you.
Okay, I'll take the blame.
You take the blame when you call you. But I'm going to call my guy too, brother, and we'll see if he makes sure it's all clear. It's just been cutting out, and let's see if we can make it through the show. We were talking about inventory, and you're going to...
The coin convention, World Fair of Money.
Philadelphia, yeah.
Yeah, where there are some massive rarities being sold.
And you're gonna bet on them, huh?
No, I'm going to watch.
Oh, you're going to watch.
Well, yeah, 1913 Liberty Nickel, one of five. You know, it's going to go for millions of dollars.
Well, that'd be fun to watch. So,
well, we're going to watch, yeah. A lot of coins that we've targeted probably won't even be there. Mm-hmm. Those wonderful silver commemorative halves that we talk about. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to vacuum up the floor if there are any of those there. We're going to buy as many as we can. And other than that, we're just going to see what's going on. This is the World's Fair of Money, the annual ANA convention, mm-hmm. American Numismatic Association in Philadelphia.
Well, when you're there, by the way, so then... If you'd like to learn more about this, Andrew has some CDs that he can send you.
Sure.
His number is 800-468-2646. Tell them that you're One Radio Network listener. And the CDs are about?
Well, there's three of them that are the most popular. The most popular one is The Definition of Money. What the heck is a dollar anyway? We're saving them. We don't know what they are.
Well, it has a picture of a dead president, and I can get some a quarter cup of Starbucks. That's what a dollar is. That's
right.
What a dollar is.
What's a dollar? So what is money is the title of the first one. The second one is the Federal Reserve. There's a lot of disinformation about this institution, who they are, what they do, where they get their money, and so forth. And then the third one, protecting your wealth. That tells you how, not where, but how to buy and sell American gold coins. And once you know how, then you can really buy them anywhere. I'd love for you to be my customer, but you can buy them from anybody. I don't make them. The only way we get any coins is by paying someone that already has them. That's the way we get them. So.
Oh, man, you're like a real guy. Buy stuff for
price X and sell it for X plus. Yeah.
What about all our listeners? I'm sure, regardless of where they live, they've seen places around the byways and the highways. Yeah. We buy gold and that
kind
of thing.
That's it.
Now, are those kind of places? I guess it's individual, but I suspect there'd be some pretty cool guys in these shops. And
I'm sure there are, but generally their business model is they can buy a dollar item for 50 cents and then sell it for a dollar.
Oh, so they get people.
You don't see the signs that say, "We sell gold," right? It's all, "We buy gold." That's it.
They want people to come in that don't really know what they have.
Well, or don't understand enough about the market, or might be desperate to sell something. I had this discussion with someone yesterday. Even a rare coin, if you're in a fire sale situation and you need to just sell it for whatever you can get today,
that's not good.
That price is going to be considerably lower than what you might get if you hold out for the highest buyer.
Sure.
So there is, of course, that.
Yeah.
And these We Buy Gold places take advantage of that, unfortunately.
Just an audience that isn't very up to speed on really what's going on, right?
Well, that's right, and especially inherited material.
Yeah, because they don't.
So you know, if you inherit a pile of gold coins and you take them to the We Buy Gold place, and let's say they're worth $1 million, but the We Buy Gold place says we'll write you a check right now for $500,000. How many people would say no?
Or $200,000? Like,
right, just write the check.
Okay, dude, liquid
money right now. Yeah. So
in
the inheritance situation, you want to make sure that your heirs understand the value of what you have and they don't just dump it to the nearest buyer. And there are plenty of them. They're everywhere.
Is it necessary if somebody is collecting gold coins and they've got 2 or 20 that they put, is it any benefit, Andrew, to put it into a trust of some kind?
Well, of course.
Is it?
Yeah, of course.
Always. It gives you a layer of protection?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah, anytime you put property in a trust, it gives it a layer of protection, eliminates probate and...
If you get sued.
If you get sued, right, they can't seize the items in the trust. It's a beneficial way to protect large amounts of wealth. But the cost to establish a trust is so high that it doesn't really make sense to do it.
Oh, it is expensive to do it?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Can you have something in a trust and still have control over it?
Of course.
You can. I thought you had to give up control.
Yeah, no, my father's trust was the Edwin K. Goss Living Trust.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a living trust.
It's a living trust. So when he passed on, the trust kept going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still alive, even though he's gone for a year now.
Was he controlling it when he was living?
Of course.
Okay. So I thought you couldn't control it. I don't know where I got that idea.
You're the trustee.
You're the trustee.
Yeah.
And why would you have protection if you were controlling it?
Well, because it's a separate entity.
I see. Rather than Patrick, the guy,
right,
dripping strings...
It's Patrick the Trust.
Ooh, the Trust.
That's run by Patrick the Guy, but that doesn't matter. What matters is the corpus, the value, or the items contained within that trust are exempt from seizure against anything that Patrick might do.
Oh.
So that's why the rich and the ultra-rich prefer the trust.
The trust.
And as an intergenerational wealth transfer type of a vehicle.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, there's no probate. You know, the property is in the trust, and the person passes on, the trust owns the property, and the trust keeps living.
Oh, and then the feds don't get in there and tax it.
There's no death taxes,
wow,
that's for sure.
They're going to be deeding all things. Old Bernie's been up in arms and been saying they're going to repeal that death tax thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't believe in inherited wealth. It doesn't belong to you. You didn't work for it.
Who's it belong
to?
So
it should revert to the government.
Oh, good.
So that they can distribute it.
Oh, good.
Or redistribute it, as the case
may
be.
So the social eye out there, that's what they believed in?
Yeah, they don't.
They
believe
in that, huh?
Inherited wealth.
Oh, I see. If you inherit money from grandpa, you didn't work for it.
Correct.
So the government gets it, and they're going to distribute it to more needy people than you.
Yes, yes.
Oh.
Redistribute.
Very clever. I like it. Well, I don't, but...
Well, it's one of the planks, again, of the Communist Manifesto.
Really?
In addition to
you keep bringing up that Communist
graduated progressive income
tax. It's a commie manufacturer.
And free public schooling and, you know.
Jeez. Really? Mm-hmm. How'd we get down this road, dude?
To each according to his need and from each according to their ability. So that is paying their fair share. What's your fair share? Well, it's more than you, anything more than what you need to live. Should be paid over to the government. But that's socialism in its plainest form.
Well, that's another meme that's out there other than, you know, Medicare for all and single payer is fair share. You hear those words? Yeah. You're going to hear a lot of that in the next few months, right?
Well, sure.
People aren't paying their fair share.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And who decides what the fair share is?
That's important.
That's
isn't
important.
It?
Who's the decider?
That's right. So it, you know that fair share thing has to do with how much you earn and how much you need. So a 90% top rate, where if you're earning over $1 million a year, you don't need that. You can live comfortably on $1 million a year. So anything over $1 million, we're going to tax at 90%. That's fair.
Well, why would anybody build a company and all that? I mean,
right.
Why would
it hampers, that's the point. It hampers growth.
You think?
Jeez. Yeah, I do think.
I think so too.
So I mean, I'm a capitalist to the core.
Yeah.
And I do not believe in a progressive income tax. In fact, I don't believe in an income tax. I think our taxes should be raised through consumption taxes.
Or tariffs.
Or tariffs, one or the other.
Consumption.